But the beginning of the verse says, by faith, Jacob did these things. Jacob means supplanter, but that's the grown-up word. We need an easier word. It may not be quite as accurate, but cheater seems to do the job. So I want you to think of what this verse is saying. By faith, the one who was named cheater at birth, and rightly so, ended his life as a blesser and as a worshiper and as one who depended and leaned on the Lord. Quite a journey. So we could label the biography of Joseph one man's journey from a cheater to a blesser and a worshiper and one who depended on the Lord. That's his life. That's the story of his life, is how he went from one to the other. I can see my slides. You cannot. All right, let me see. Do something about that. Okay. Oh, now that's wrong. Whoa. I have it full screen, and it's presenter mode up there. That's backwards. All right, let's see what we can do here. Let's go to duplicate and just hope for the best that way. All right, now let's try. Okay, we both see the same thing. That's better than we had it before. Okay. All right, so what are we saying here? Don't look at those. Right. So Jacob had this spiritual growth through his life, and we can start it with him being this supplanter and cheater, and we can end it with him being a worshiper and a blesser and a leaner on him, on the Lord, we'll say. He says he was leaning on the top of his staff. That's physical, but I'm kind of taking it spiritually. So basically, we have his life is this ramp where he starts off as unspiritual as you get, and he finishes spiritual. Now, you might think, fine, okay. I mean, he drew this ramp, and I mean, this happens to lots of people, right? I know lots of people like this, and the Bible's full of lots of people like this, so what's the big deal? Well, my point is, the Bible's not full of people like this. In fact, I will challenge you to find any character in the Bible that shows this more than Jacob. And I could be wrong. I mean, I'm not saying I've got this down perfectly, but I don't think so. Now let's think about it for a minute, because, you know, what are the characters in the Bible that there's so much written about, like there is Jacob? Well, David, there's a lot written about David. But David, in his earliest days, was spiritually minded. So you don't quite see the ramp like that. And you say, well, Paul, there's somebody. Paul definitely started off way down, and he ended up way up. But you don't read about the ramp, do you? You read about him being a persecutor and when he got saved. And even though there's some time that elapsed, you don't read any details about it. The next time you see him on the scene, he's super spiritual. So it's like a quantum leap step up from what we read. So as you think about it, I don't think there's a character in the Bible that we can read about that shows such transition through his life, becoming more and more like the Lord wants him to be, from cheater to worshiper. So that's basically what we're going to look at. Now, I am a little tricky. I'm a little scheming. I have a little Jacob in me. And I specifically chose the words lessons drawn from the life of Jacob, because that kind of gives enough wiggle room to do a lot of things. So if you think that we're going to move through the chapters of Genesis in Jacob's life in some orderly fashion, from beginning to end, that's not what's happening. And sometimes I'll take a topic and I'll just say, look at this in Jacob's life, and go off on a tangent and talk about that subject. It's a lesson drawn from Jacob's life. So be ready for anything this week. Now, before we begin looking at Jacob in particular, I'd like us to take the whole book of Genesis and see where Jacob fits in the book of Genesis, get an overview of Genesis, and then come down to Jacob in particular. Now, if this is your thing, if you're like, I love like structures of books and overview of books, tonight is your night. But that's all you're getting. So, and if it's not your thing, and you're like, oh no, listen, he's going to go off in this direction, that's not my cup of tea, as they say, don't worry, it'll all be over soon. So I'll probably take the worst of both worlds and do it a little bit, and then that's it. So let's take a little overview of Genesis. It won't be too painful, but I'm going to actually give an overview of the whole book of Genesis. Now you're wondering, oh, wait a minute. No, don't worry. It won't be very long. Okay. First of all, the first 9 chapters of Genesis are concerned with creation, the creation accounts, and how we got here. Now, you might think, no, not all 9 chapters, just the first few chapters, not 9 chapters. No, I'll say 9 chapters. We'll see why soon. And then in chapters 10 to 50, we have 3 patriarchs, the story of 3 patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And again, you're going to wonder how I ever got invited here, because you're going to say it is the story of 4 individuals, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph. And in fact, you will fight hard and say, well, the last of Genesis is primarily concerning Joseph. And I again will dig my heels in and leave it the way it is right now. So not so bad. I can remember 2 things, right? Creation accounts, 1 to 9, patriarchs, 10 to 50. And there are 3 of each of them. Okay. All right, let's see them a little bit in more detail. So the 3 creation accounts in Genesis 1 through 9, and in fact, you're welcome to turn back to Genesis. Don't worry, we won't read the whole thing. Genesis 1:1 starts the first creation account. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Creation account number 1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now, what is this answering? What question does this creation account answer? It answers, how did we get here? And it answers it with the answer, God made us. That's how we got here. And if you're wondering, like if you look down at your body and you're like, how, and you look around at creation, like, how did we get here? The answer is God made us. Well, that's not all in the creation accounts. So the next one starts at chapter 2 and verse 4, if you want to flip to it. Chapter 2, verse 4. This is the history of the heavens and the earth when they were created. In the day that the Lord God made the earth and the heavens before any plant and so on. What is it going? It's talking about creation again now. Creation account 2, and this will go up to the end of chapter 4, chapter 4 and verse 26. And it begins the history of the heavens and earth when they were created and so on. It's going to also answer the question, how did we get here? But it's going to answer it a little bit differently. Not how did we get here, this physical stuff and my physical life, how did we get here? It's going to answer the question, how did we get here in regard to the moral problems of the earth? Like, you look around and all of the problems and the news reports of all terrible things happening, you're like, how did we get here? Well, the answer, the fall. That's how we got here. And then, chapter 5-9 is a third creation account, and look at how it begins. This is the book of the genealogy of Adam. In the day that God created man, he made him in the likeness of God. He created them male and female, and so on. And this now answers the question, how did we get here in the sense of, how did we get to the post-flood world? That's the world in which we live. The answer is, well, the pre-flood world was destroyed, and we then came from Noah and his three sons. That's how we got here in the sense of being in the post-flood world. So three creation accounts, all three sections begin with this idea of creation, talking about the day that God created. Okay, well, that takes us to the end of chapter 9. Now I told you that chapter 10 through the end of the book is the three stories of the three patriarchs. So let's divide the screen into three pieces again, and we're going to take them one at a time. So chapter 10, verse 1 to 25, verse 11, deals with one of the patriarchs. You can guess which one. 25:12 to 35:29 is the next, and 36:1 to the end of 50 is the third. So three sections. Now, what would we find in these sections? Well, Abraham takes up most of the first section, but we will note that two chapters are devoted to Noah's other descendants before we come to Abraham. So if you look at the beginning of chapter 10, it says, this is the genealogy of the sons of Noah. And in two chapters, discussion of the sons of Noah occur, and the Tower of Babel is included in that. And then chapter 12, verse 1, now the Lord had said to Abram, and we start now focusing in on that one individual, Abram or Abraham, and he carries on till 25:11. At the end of that section, we have Abraham's death, and we start another section. And if you would come to chapter 25, and verse 12. Now this is the genealogy of. Well, we know it's going to get to Isaac. But first, there is a short section dealing with Ishmael. Ishmael is dealt with, and then in verse 19, this is the genealogy of Isaac, and Isaac takes up the rest of that section. At the end of that time, 35:29, Isaac dies. If you want to turn to that. So Isaac breathed his last and died. And now chapter 36 starts, and we start, well, we're going to get to Jacob really soon, but it starts with Esau. And Esau is dealt with for a chapter. And then 37:1, actually 2, it says, now this is the history of Jacob. Okay? So we have Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And prior to each one of them, there is a handling of other descendants, whether it be Noah's other descendants or Ishmael or Esau. Okay. Now, you might still have a lot of questions, because Isaac's story certainly begins before 25:19, right? I mean, what happened in Genesis 22? Abraham and Isaac went up that mountain in Moriah. I mean, and Jacob, well, his story begins far before chapter 37. In fact, chapter 37 is kind of where the whole Joseph thing begins. So how do we make sense of all of this? Well, it does turn out that during the story of Abraham or Isaac or Jacob, in each of these, there is some, for lack of a better term, some rising star, some rising character that's brought on the scene. And in Abraham's life, sorry, Jacob dies there, sorry. In Abraham's life, that character is Isaac. And in Isaac's life, that character is Jacob. And in Jacob's life, that character is Joseph. So you're like, okay, he didn't forget Joseph after all. Joseph makes his way in there. But why do I call it Jacob's story if a lot of it has to do with Joseph? Well, look at that. Look at that verse again. 37:2. This is the history of, who does it say?
Jacob.
Then the next word. Joseph, being 17 years old. So what it's saying is, this is Jacob's story. And one of the stars in Jacob's story is Joseph. And this is how these chapters are put together. Now, there are a lot of similarities in these three accounts. A lot of similarities. For instance, Isaac has a rival, right? Ishmael. And there's a lot of verses given to this rivalry between Isaac and Ishmael. What happens when Isaac has Jacob? There's a rivalry. And who is that? Well, Esau. And Jacob has Joseph, but there's a rivalry with all of the older brothers. So these themes kind of keep repeating again and again. And it gets more complicated. Because in the life of Abraham, you read of famine, you read of the involvement of Egypt, you read of Abraham's prosperity, you read of God appearing to Abraham, you read of God giving Abraham promises, you read of Abraham building at least an altar or altars. And guess what? You come to Isaac and you read of famine and Egypt and prosperity, how God prospers him and God appearing to him and promises given to him and an altar. And in Jacob's life, you read the very same thing. Famine, Egypt plays an important role, prosperity. Now, Isaac, by the way, Egypt is in there in the sense that he does not go to Egypt. Like, that is a possibility and so on. I'm not saying Isaac went to Egypt. I'm saying that Egypt is talked about, and in fact, he does not try to go down there during that famine. But you see these same themes coming up again and again throughout these chapters. They are repeated throughout. So in the life of Jacob, you're going to have two halves of his life. There is the half where it's really the story of Isaac, even though Jacob does a lot of things in that story. Jacob, the birthright and the blessing and the fleeing to Laban's and the marrying and the children recorded and the coming back and seeing Esau. You say, well, that's a good chunk of Jacob's life. And I completely agree, but that's all part of what's called the story of Isaac. And when Isaac dies, then there's a second half of Jacob's life where Joseph plays a very prominent role. Now, as you notice, Jacob dies almost at the end of the book of Genesis. And there's not another major section of Genesis to go because the story of Jacob has ended. Now, there are loose ends to tie up. And yes, Joseph is mentioned as dying and so on. But there's no lengthy text given to that. So you're welcome to either take a picture or if you want me to send it to somebody, I can do that. Or if you don't, this isn't your thing, just sit back and will change soon enough. All right. Oh, sorry. Another important aspect is favoritism that arises. Favoritism within the household. And that makes its way in all of them. For good or for bad, or everything in between, favoritism makes its way in there. So for Abraham, I'm just going to run through these really fast. I would not recommend you try to write these down. They actually are mostly captured here, so you pretty much have it. But just as you know, that Abraham endures, they all endure famine. They all go to Egypt or almost go to Egypt. Isaac, in fact, does not go. When they get down there, Abraham says, "She is my sister." And he's chastised for this deception. And the angry ruler sends him back, but sends him back with goods. Isaac pulls the same thing. "She is my sister." He's chastised for deception by an angry ruler and receives goods. The sons are chastised for claimed deception by an angry ruler. This is when they appear before Joseph. But he sends them back with goods. It's kind of funny to see this repeating themes that keep coming back and back again. Now, Jacob himself, by the way, is going to go to Egypt, but he's explicitly told this time it's okay. Barrenness is a big thing. There's the barrenness of Sarah, the barrenness of Rebecca. It takes 20 years for her to conceive, and the barrenness of Rachel. So again, these recurring themes come back again and again. The reaction to the barrenness, Hagar. The reaction to the barrenness, interestingly, with Isaac, is waiting in prayer. And then the reaction with Jacob kind of goes back to the wrong reaction, and there's the handmaid. Eventually, there is a child born, though long-awaited, there's the birth of a son. Eventually, though long-awaited, there's the birth of the sons of Isaac and Rebekah. And eventually, though long-awaited, the birth of the sons of Rachel in particular. Abraham favors Isaac later, and actually earlier favors Ishmael. Isaac favors Esau, while Rebekah favors Jacob. All these dysfunctional families, I tell you. Jacob favors Joseph and Benjamin, probably for very good reason. Sibling rivalry, Ishmael and Isaac, Esau and Jacob, Joseph's brothers with Joseph. And then Abraham has his encounters with God, and Isaac has his encounters with God, and Jacob has his encounters with God. And this is actually going to be a little bit important because Jacob, we're focusing on him eventually. Think about this. Jacob's father was Isaac. His grandfather was Abraham. I mean, first of all, this is something to live up to. But, you know, he heard these stories. By the way, Abraham's life and Jacob's life overlap by 15 years. So for 15 years, they were living at the same time. Now, though they were living at the same time, did they know each other and see each other a lot? You don't find out for sure until Hebrews 11, and it says they dwelt in tents together. So yes, Jacob knew Abraham well, and Isaac, of course. Now, think about this. Jacob is brought up with it. Do you think Abraham ever told Jacob about his encounters with God? I mean, he's like, some of the best days of Abraham's life was when he had encounters with God. And same with Isaac. And Jacob gets told this, but where's Jacob's encounter with God? He grows up, years pass, and decades pass, He doesn't have encounters with God. He finally leaves after the Esau incident with the blessing. He flees to go to Uncle Laban's part of the land. And he's much older than you might think he is at that time, by the way. He's not some 17-year-old kid. He's a fully grown, some might even say kind of old person. But he goes and he sleeps. You remember the story on the rock, and he has that dream, that vision, the ladder up to heaven, and so on. And he says, surely God was in this place, and I didn't know it. But for the first time, he could say, it happened to me. I wonder how much he thought. I grew up hearing these stories about from my grandfather and hearing them from my father, and it never happened to me. But now it happened to me. That was a pivotal point in his life. There were several, but that was one of them. And, you know, this is one of the things that we learn from Jacob, is that the spiritual highlights and the spiritual landmark moments that exist in a parent's life don't automatically come to the child. The child has to experience them for himself. This is what Jacob eventually did. And sometimes growing up in a Christian house has its own kind of quirks to it. It's a blessing. Don't get me wrong. It's a blessing to be brought up in a Christian home. But it has its own quirks, as we just kind of hear about what happened to our parents and how the Lord had answered a prayer here and there. You know, if I asked you about stories in your life where the Lord answered a prayer so clearly and directly, I bet you could give me some. I bet you could. And I'd hear about them. But if I put the brakes on and said, all right, let's stretch out your life day by day, like a page a day, and you write down where these were, they're probably very far apart, right? We hear about them as kids. We think they must happen all the time. Why aren't they happening to me? Well, oftentimes, these real pivotal moments where we can really say, God dealt with me on that, many times they don't happen very often in a life. And we have to pray for our children, pray for the younger ones in the assembly, and pray for them that they would get a feel and see what the older ones have gone through. And for Jacob, it took a long time, but he finally had the encounter with God that he had heard about from his father and grandfather. Well, God gave a promise of descendants and a blessing to all of them. There was altar building in the life of all of them. God's hand of provision and blessing was seen in the life of all of them. They all had conflicts with the locals. Just amazing how this book of Genesis is not some haphazardly written account, like here's some stuff that happened, and here's more that happened, and here's more that happened, and then the book ends. No, these are very carefully chosen events from these people's lives, not written in any haphazard manner. All right, so here we are at our picture, at least some of our picture, and I'd like to point out the beginnings of these sections. Now, I told you we have Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, these three stories, but we noticed that each one begins with the other guys. There's Noah's other descendants. We've got to get them out of the way. And then we deal with Abraham. There's Ishmael. Then we get to Isaac. And there's Esau. And then we get to Jacob. Now, what do you notice? There are a couple of things you should notice about the ones that go first. Two things to notice. First of all, if you were to call one spiritual and the other carnal, which one would be which? I mean, let's go to Isaac first. Isaac and Ishmael, which one would represent the spiritual one? Well, Isaac. But Ishmael goes first. And Abraham, you'd say, well, Abraham was the spiritual one, and Noah's other descendants go first. And in the life of Jacob eventually, maybe not at first, eventually was the spiritual one, but Esau is dealt with first. So you should notice, first comes the fleshly, and then comes the spiritual. This is consistent pattern through. And the next thing you should notice is that the time given to the fleshly is very noticeably shorter than the time given to the spiritual. This should teach us a couple of lessons. First of all, it's a universal pattern in the Bible from beginning to end. First the carnal, then the spiritual. This is a pattern in the Bible. The proportion of space can give us a clue as to God's priorities. Noah's other descendants, Ishmael and Esau, they're all dealt with in short order. God is more interested in the spiritual development of a believer than in the temporary achievements of mankind. So think about this. What's the latest going on with Microsoft? They bought ChatGPT. They're into the AI world now. Amazon, they're taking over the universe. Facebook, you can't get away from it. And then what's going on in Craig's life? You know, from what we have looked at and observed, it appears God's more interested in the spiritual development in you and in me than he is in what the latest thing is in a big company. First the carnal, then the spiritual, and the carnal is dealt with in short order. Man's achievements always went first. And I just want to say this. This always happened. The firstborn, that is, first is important in importance, was not born first. Remember, Cain was born first, but Abel was the firstborn, the more important. Ishmael was born first, but Isaac was the firstborn, the spiritual. Esau, he was born first, but Jacob was the more important, the firstborn. Adam was born first as the first man, and as the second man, Christ. Adam first, then Christ. First the flesh, then the spiritual. And guess what? If you've been born again, you've been born twice, right? How are you born first? Fleshly. That which is born according to the flesh is flesh. And then you were born spiritually. So which one is older? We have two natures, right? Like the old nature and the new nature. I want to rename them. The older nature and the younger nature. Now look at this. What was the promise to Rebekah concerning Jacob and Esau? The older shall serve the younger. And this is God's promise to us. Our older nature is going to serve the younger nature. It doesn't always look like that. We go through life and we fail, and we're like, the older nature keeps winning. But eventually the older nature will serve the younger nature. The younger nature will prevail. Let's stop there. We'll pick things up next time. Father, thank you for your word, what we've been able to see concerning Genesis and the life of Jacob. And we thank you for the promise that the older will serve the younger, and that the spiritual, though dealt with second, ends up being preeminent. In the Lord Jesus' name, amen. All right, we'll aim to